This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Good old days. I'm Jerome Manigan. I have stories for you from the April 2012 issue of Looking Back magazine. We're starting today's program with this item from Pearl Hoffman, A Class Act. It was spring 1964. Our daughter, Arlene, was scheduled to graduate from high school in June, and the prom was just 2 months away. Arlene had been asked to the prom, but she gently declined. One day, as she sat pensively looking out our living room window, Arlene turned to me and said, "There is someone I'd give anything to go to the prom with." She sighed heavily before adding, "Richard Chamberlain." "The actor?" I asked. "You've got to be kidding." "No. For 2 cents, I'd write and invite him to come with me." I took 2 pennies from my wallet and handed them to her, and that was how it all began. Arlene made a few phone calls and managed to get the name of Richard Chamberlain's agent. She wrote to the agent and enclosed a letter of invitation addressed to the actor. Mr. Chamberlain, a man of class and distinction, replied with a handwritten letter. He graciously thanked Arlene for her invitation and issued his deep regret he would be unable to escort her to the prom due to a conflicting acting engagement. Within the next few days, Arlene received 3 prom invitations. Teenage popularity is often 1 part reality and 3 parts illusion. A Class Act was written by Pearl Hoffman. We're turning now to That Night in 1938. It's written by Mary Agnes Ryan. Turn back the years, way, way back to March 1938 and the Orlando, Florida event of the year. That is, if you asked some afflicted teenage girl, of whom I was one. Nelson Eddy was on tour, and his tour included our own municipal auditorium. We were charmed with his good looks and his singing in romantic movies like Naughty Maria, 1935. In 1936, Rosemarie, featuring his beautiful rendition of Indian Love Call, was a must for his increasing group of fans. My best friends, Carlotta and Selma, and I went together one 1937 Sunday afternoon to see the movie Maytime. That was the year Carlotta's mother treated me. Mom didn't think she could afford it despite my desperate pleas. Then the memorable Sweethearts, 1938, thoroughly enchanted all my friends and me. We were quite ready to meet the gentleman. Teenagers were not his only supporters. His classical training brought in opera enthusiasts, too. I don't remember any hints of disappointment when his program turned out to be such: German, Italian, and French. It just didn't matter. The sound of his voice and his good looks were too thrilling. The one, the only, Nelson Eddy was singing for us. My autograph book has survived many years, and amidst other landmarks, it bears witness to before and after Nelson. This one was written the evening of the concert. "Dear Mary Agnes, what a night. Don't you love him, though? You and who else? A more level-headed friend penned this: "I'm glad you get to see Nelson Eddy. Only don't get too excited about him. Here's hoping you get his autograph." And then, "Oh, that hair, blonde. Oh, those eyes, blue. He's just too, too. Oh, Mary Agnes, wasn't Nelson grand? We were so lucky." Unfortunately, our teachers didn't use this overwhelming experience to have us find out about the many years of study Mr. Eddy demanded of himself, where he studied, and the career choices he's made, all to better share his gift. We would have learned about research and obtained a fresh look at dedication and perseverance, even though we would have remained those very giddy teenagers. Leaving behind this foolishness by many, many years doesn't diminish this special memory. It just makes it even more memorable. That Night in 1938 was written by Mary Agnes Ryan. And now we're turning to Happy Trails. This is by David Bell. He takes a look at Old Salem, North Carolina. Family friend Elaine Pace was born and raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. She was living in Northwest Arkansas when she was widowed and decided to move back to her hometown. "Since I love to visit new places, a couple of other friends and I volunteered to help move her back home. Before meeting Elaine, I knew two things about Old Salem: that it was a historic site in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and that it was not the Salem of the infamous Salem, Massachusetts witch trials of 1692-1693. And that's about it. Over the years, our friend taught us a lot about Old Salem and its Moravian church history. Every Christmas, Elaine still gives us traditional Moravian cookies, those delicious super-thin cookies that date back to colonial America. She also delights her Arkansas friends with descriptions of the beauty and wonderful music of the old city at Christmas and the magnificent Easter sunrise service at God's Acre, the original Moravian cemetery in Salem. The Moravian Church and Old Salem cannot be separated. The religious group has its roots in the former Bohemian and Moravia, which are parts of today's Czech Republic. The Moravian Church was organized in America in 1735 in Savannah, Georgia. From there, it spread to a tract of land in North Carolina called Wachovia, to a new city set on almost 99,000 acres. Construction of Wachovia began in 1766. Its name was later changed to Salem. The history of Salem is intriguing. Organized around what we would call a communal lifestyle, the Moravian Church, which arose out of the Protestant movement, placed a premium on liturgy, piety, and great music. Classic music is still important within the church. While no one owned private property within the city limits, there was an emphasis on making one's own living through the trades, the crafts, and agrarian endeavors. Salem had church members who were bakers, cobblers, gunsmiths, and tinsmiths, among many other trades. It was what is known as a trades city. My favorite place in Old Salem is the Salem Tavern. I love the traditional food served at this fascinating historic site, and George Washington really did sleep there, spending two nights at the inn while passing through North Carolina in June 1791. Only church members could live in Salem and other Moravian communities, and all abided by the community's regulations. Single men and single women lived in segregated housing called, appropriately enough, the Single Brothers Workshop and the Single Sisters house and garden. Elaine says, even God's Acre, the Salem Cemetery, was originally divided into men's and women's sections. But 55 years after Salem's founding, the Moravian Church abandoned the communal model of living. In 1849, Salem declined the opportunity to become the county seat of Forsyth County and sold property for the formation of a more industry-oriented seat of government, the city of Winston. But in 1913, the inevitable happened, and the two cities merged into today's Winston-Salem. I love the architecture of the downtown area of Old Salem, which has become a living museum of colonial American history. As Elaine showed us around the old city, we encountered building after building that dated from the 18th century. Docents were in most not only to tell about the activities of the establishment, but also to expertly demonstrate the trade or craft as practice of old. In the Winkler Bakery, a butler hat shop, at the Gunsmith, Tinsmith, and numerous other buildings. Not surprisingly, Old Salem is listed as a National Historic Landmark. Sitting as a gem at the center of Old Salem is the tranquil and green Salem Square. On the east side sits the gorgeous Moravian Home Church. While not officially under oversight of either of the historic organizations, Home Church opens the doors of its beautiful and ornate sanctuary to visitors. And like the docents at the Old Salem Historic Sites, guides provide a history lesson on the Moravian Church and its place in colonial America. As we walk the brick-paved sidewalks crossing Salem Square, Elaine points to a vacant, grassy lot. My puzzled expression turns into a smile as she explains why she is mentioning it. That lot, she explains, is the site of the original Krispy Kreme donut shop, opened in 1937. Now, that's an unexpected highlight of Old Salem, I thought as I gazed in reverence at another type of historical site. I love history. Happy Trails, story about Old Salem, North Carolina, was written by David Bell. And we're turning to a new feature in Looking Back magazine. It's called It Happened In, and this is 1948. Tops at the box office. Call Northside, 777. Easter Parade, Hamlet, I Remember Mama, Johnny Belinda, Red River, Sorry, Wrong Number, The Pale Face. President of the U.S., Harry Truman. Vice President, Bacon. Truman, who had been vice president before Franklin Delano Roosevelt's death, never appointed a VP when he took over as president. Population of the U.S., 146,631,000. Births, 3,637,000. High school graduates, males, 563,000. Females, 627,000. Average salary for full-time employee, $2,900. Sports winners, NFL, Philadelphia Eagles defeat Chicago Cardinals. NBA, Baltimore Bullets defeat Philadelphia Warriors. World Series, Cleveland Indians defeat Boston Braves. Stanley Cup, Toronto Maple Leafs defeat Detroit Red Wings. The Masters, Claude Harmon wins. PGA Championship, Ben Hogan wins. Average cost for 1 pound of bread, 14 cents. 1 pound of bacon, 77 cents. 1 pound butter, 87 cents. 1 dozen eggs, 72 cents. 1 gallon milk, 87 cents. 10 pounds of potatoes, 57 cents. 1 pound of coffee, 51 cents. 5 pounds of sugar, 47 cents. 1 gallon of gasoline, 26 cents. 1 movie ticket, 36 cents. 1 postage stamp, 3 cents. A new car, $1,250. A single family home, $7,700. And on January the 30th, 1948, the Metro Daily News had as its banner headlines, Mahatma Gandhi assassinated, the respected political and spiritual leader known for his belief in nonviolent resistance, is shot by extreme nationalists. And the same newspaper on March the 8th, 1948, has as its headline, Supreme Court rules separation between church and state, says no to religious instruction in public schools. Notable inventions and firsts. April 30th, the Land Rover is introduced at the Amsterdam Motor Show. In June, the Ed Sullivan Show appears, airing on CBS under the name Toast of the Town. Famous birthdays. Andrew Lloyd Webber, March the 22nd. Peggy Fleming, July the 27th. June, Bell Labs announces invention of the transistor. June the 8th, the Porsche 356 is road certified in Austria. October the 19th, high-octane gasoline patent issued to Donald Campbell, Homer Martin, Charles Tyson, and Edgar Humphrey, four inventors working for Exxon. October the 23rd, James Leroy Brown becomes first African-American to receive his wings under the Naval Aviation Cadet Program. George D. Mistra develops Velcro after studying the fastening effects of burrs on clothing. The 1948 Summer Olympics were held in London, England, the first Summer Olympics since the event was held in Berlin in 1936. Radio stars and hit shows. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Duffy's Tavern, The Falcon, Fred Allen, The Green Hornet, Inner Sanctum, Jack Benny, The Long Ranger, Suspense, This Is Your FBI. Top hits of 1948. Buttons and Bows, performed by Dinah Shore. Nature Boy, performed by Nat King Cole. I'm Looking Over a Four-Leaf Clover, Art Mooney. 12th Street Rag, Pee Wee Hunt. Bumble Boogie, Freddie Martin. A Tree in the Meadow, Margaret Whiting. I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, Les Brown. It's Magic, Doris Day. Manana Is Soon Enough for Me, Peggy Lee. And Woody Woodpecker by Kay Kaiser. And with that, we are turning away from It Happened in 1948 to The Mailbox. These are letters sent to the editors of the Looking Back magazine. This one says, love, love, love your fantastic magazine with the recipes and pictures. Keep up the work and you will keep your loyal customers. I have such a connection to you. This is by Doris Ann Treadway of South Houston, Texas. As I began reading the story about the little girl in Detroit, Michigan, awaiting the man with the pony in the November 2011 issue of Looking Back, I thought I was reading my own story. My parents and I lived with my grandmother for a while on Seaborn Avenue in Detroit in the late 1930s. Our next-door neighbor's son, my age, and I were also smitten by a man with a pony who came around the neighborhood taking pictures. Jimmy and I would go out daily and be overjoyed when we saw them coming. We loved that pony so much that the man promised to give us the pony the next day when they came by. Wow, our own pony. The next day, we were both up and out our back doors as early as we could be, watching for our pony. We waited, and yes, waited some more, but no signs of the pony or the man. Oh, how disappointed we were. But we decided they would come by the next day, or probably the day after that. And we waited, never to see or learn about either the man or the beloved pony again, until now. I must have been too big to get on the pony to have my picture taken. But Jimmy was just the right size and dressed for the occasion. Our pony was written by Joan Canary of North Tazewell, Virginia. After reading your article, Book of Remembrances, Looking Back, April, May, 2011, I found my 90-year-old sister's autograph book. I took it to the nursing home and read it to Ruth. It brought back lots of smiles and memories. Here are a few of them for you to look at. Love your magazine and the memories it brings back. Whatever you wish, I wish for you. Whatever you plan, I hope you'll do. Whatever you do, I hope your success will bring you happiness. Round went the album. Hither it came for me to write in, so here's my name. Always remember, true friends are like diamonds, precious and rare. False friends are like autumn leaves, found everywhere. You asked me to write in your album. I'll do it without a frown. But just to be different from others, I'll write my name upside down. I met you as a stranger. I took you as a friend. I hope we meet in heaven where friendship never ends. This book is like a garden in which all your friends may grow. So I'll just plant a forget-me-not and sign my name below. It's good to be good. It's fun to be bad. This trying to choose is just driving me mad. Here's that you may always live, and I may never die. Little dabs of powder, little drops of paint, make a girl's complexion look like what it ain't. There was a fellow named Hall, who fell in the spring in the fall. 'Twould have been a good thing had he died in the spring, but he didn't. He died in the fall. That material came from Betty J. Wyatt of Elizabeth, Pennsylvania. And we're ending today's program with a Decoration Day reunion. It's written by Joanne Amason. For as far back as my memory will take me, Decoration Day was always the time for a family reunion. Back then, May the 30th was called Decoration Day. It was in 1967 that a law was passed to officially change the name to Memorial Day. Everyone, including extended family members, looked with anticipation toward this event. There were really no special plans made. We knew there would be parades during the day. There would be a gathering of our family members from near and far. We would all meet in the late afternoon at Vine Street Cemetery in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and gather around the gravesites of family members. We would make the rounds, beginning with my great-grandparents, Robert and Elizabeth Wallace. We would then move on to other family members, including aunts, uncles, and cousins. We placed flowers on all the graves. The flowers were usually lilac, since that was what was in bloom at that time of the year. It wasn't until many years later that I realized my great-great-grandparents, Thomas and Isabella Wallace, were also buried in Vine Street. My goodness, there were so many Wallaces. When we were done at the cemetery, we all went back to Aunt Jessie's house. She had a large apartment just a few blocks away. It was at her apartment that the family always gathered, and Aunt Jess was always prepared. She had one of those old Chambers gas stoves that had a deep well on the right rear side. The Chambers advertisement read, "The range that cooks with the gas turned off. You could prepare food, place it in a special container, and drop it into the well. Cover it, and in a few hours your dinner was done. I guess you could say it was the forerunner to the crock pot. A ham was always cooking in the oven on that day. Aunt Annie would bring a big bowl of her fabulous cream slaw. For dessert, there was a vanilla ice cream in the freezer from Price's Dairy and a sunshine cake in a big round tin on the countertop. Just the thought of all that delicious food makes my mouth water." The men were the first to eat, and they were seated at the big round oak dining room table. As the men finished, the ladies washed and dried dishes, and the children were called to the table next. When the children finished, it was time for the ladies to eat. After everyone was fed and the kitchen was cleaned up, we all gathered in the living room to visit and share family stories since the last time we met. The overnight accommodations were always fun. Aunt Jess's sister, Aunt Annie, and Aunt Nellie took some of us to their homes for the night. But those who stayed with Aunt Jess probably had the most fun and the least sleep. We slept all over the place. I remember one time when a couple of cushions from chairs in the living room were placed on the floor in a corner of the guest room and became my bed. I think we kids slept from sheer exhaustion. Our family also gathered on July the 4th and Labor Day, but the most memorable get-togethers were those Decoration Day reunions we all spent together. A Decoration Day reunion was written by Joanne Amundsen. And with that, we're at the end of today's edition of The Good Old Days. I'm Jerome Manigan, inviting you to join me again next week, same place, same time, for another journey back in time to the good old days. Bye-bye. Good Old Days was recorded in the studios of Radio Reading Services, WRRS, the voice of information, by Mark DeWitt.